Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 21st, 2005. Today's session is entitled Trapped by Our Traditions, presented by Paul Olson. Disc number OLP-2005-04.
Here is one. Yusef Eman. Again, these are the 60s of their stage poems. Brought here in slave ships and pitched overboard, love your enemy. Language taken away, culture taken away, love your enemy. Work from sunup to sundown, love your enemy. Last hired, first fired, love your enemy. Rape your mother, love your enemy. Lynch your father, love your enemy. Bomb your churches, love your enemy. Kill your children, love your enemy. Forced to fight his wars, love your enemy. Pay the highest rent, love your enemy. Sell you rotten food, love your enemy. Forced to live in the slums, love your enemy. Dilapidated schools, love your enemy. Put you in jail, love your enemy. Bitten by dogs, love your enemy. Water hose you down, love your enemy. Love, 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 love. Love for everybody else, but when will we love ourselves? But again, I'm looking for some reactions again.
Sad.
You're white. We're all white in here. Welcome to Holden.
There's a lot of anger.
We're trying. But what?
There's a lot of anger.
A lot of anger. And indeed, it's kind of hard to, you know, I have two roads diverged and they run, and sorry I could not. That's a lot easier than anger. I often think, man, I could just teach Keats and Shelley and Wordsworth and I wouldn't have half the conflict in class that we do. But the conflict's great. Okay, what else do you feel?
Well, I like the contrast and the religious with the reality.
Love your enemy and how can I do that? Rape your mother. Lynch your daddy. Yeah. I mean, this is African American history, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet we've got this Christian notion of love your enemy. You're making it pretty hard. So what's happening with these poets that maybe didn't happen with all these folks that we listed here for you? I would argue that Shakespeare really does this, but in a very different way, but we ain't going to get into that. How did these guys undo some of your thinking? And again, the title of this little session is Trapped by Our Traditions. Is there a different vision with these poets that awakens something? And what is that? That awakens something in us that we really hadn't maybe been conscious of.
Oftentimes we're not aware of the most great difficulties of the last people that we're going through.
Yep. I'm going to write that. Aware. And I think vision is what literature is all about. I love the line from Maya Angelou here, dear friend poet. She's a poet and she's a great one. And Maya Angelou says about, we survive in the exact relationship to the dedication of our poets. And she's talking about those poets who raise the questions, who make us aware and create a different vision that, in fact, we cannot survive without it. That's a good quote to memorize. There will be a quiz at the end of the hour, so you got that? We survive in the exact relationship to the dedication of our poets. Repeat it? No, never mind. Okay, well, it gets even more radical by some of these guys. I'm reading them like I've heard Don L. Lee, that's the name of this guy, read this, and this isn't me, this is how, I'm trying to copy him. Super cool! Ultra black, a tan purple head, a beautiful shade. He had a double natural that would put the sisters to shame. His dashikis were tailor-made, and his beads were imported seashells from some black country I never heard of. He was triple hip. His tikis were hand-carved out of ivory and came express from the motherland. He would greet you in Swahili, say goodbye in Yoruba. Woo! Jim, he'd be so cool and intelligent. Cool, cool is so cool. He was uncool by other black dudes cool. Cool, cool, ultra cool was bop cool, icebox cool. So cool, cold, cool. His wine didn't have to be cool. Him was air-conditioned cool. Cool, cool, real cool made me cool. Now, ain't that cool? Cool, cool, so cool. Him nicknamed refrigerator. Cool, cool, so cool, 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 cool. He didn't know. After Detroit, Newark, Chicago, L.A., we had the hip. Cool, cool, super cool, real cool. That to be black is to be very hot. Just talk to us. You know what L.A., you know Chicago, you know Detroit. Watts, what happened? I sat by the television by my mother, and she said, why are they burning their houses? They're their own houses. We all asked that. What's happened to this guy? Super cool, ultra black. He was so cool, his wine didn't have to be cooled. His dashikis were tailor-made and came express out of Africa. He's really with it. And is he trapped by his traditions that he can't even... This is a poem about a character that doesn't have vision. Okay, but here's another one, and then we'll go to Frost. Because Frost has something to say, but this is the most radical poem that I know of in African-American, in American literature, I think. And I don't know all the poems, but... and I just lost the place for it. Well, I got two more. I went to Luther College, which is pretty much all white students, and then I went to the University of Oregon, and there I got introduced to, that's where I got introduced. I was part of this too. I mean, this was my only canon. In fact, I was sitting in a class in grad school at the University of Oregon, and my best friend at that time, we were both working on our master's degrees, and he was black, and we got to be friends because we played basketball every noon. We read books a little bit, but mostly we played basketball. And we got to be good friends, and the teacher once referred to, and again, I have I'm almost done with a master's degree in American literature. I had an undergrad major in English and history, just remember that background. And the teacher in the class referred to Richard Wright, and I turned to my friend John and said, "Who's Richard Wright?" I'm almost done with a master's degree in English. I've already got the BA underneath, right? And I had never heard of Richard Wright. That is institutional racism. I mean, nobody sat there and said, make sure they don't read Richard Wright. But it just kind of evolved. And look at all the causes that we have. I know that some of you out there have causes that matter. And how this stuff just evolves because we're unaware and unconscious. And then once we're conscious, then what do we do? That's what Robert Frost is going to talk about. But here is the first black literature I ever heard. And I'm sitting in there, lots of black students, but lots of white students too, at the University of Oregon, and the militant, I would say, and he would too, Alvin Obert, he's a pretty famous poet now, but he taught this class. And this is the first black literature I ever heard. "Nigger, can you kill?" And I'm sitting there like this. "Nigger, can you kill?" Kind of slipping down a little bit in my chair. "Nigger, can you kill? Can you kill? Can a nigger kill? Can a nigger kill a honky? Can a nigger kill a man? Can you kill? Nigger, huh? Nigger, can you kill? Do you know how to draw blood? Can you poison? Can you stab a Jew? Can you kill, huh? Nigger? Can you kill? Can you run a Protestant down in their 68 Eldorado? That's all they're good for anyway. Can you kill? Can you piss on a blonde head? Can you cut it off? Can you kill? Can a nigger die? A nigger can die. We ain't got to prove we can die. We got to prove we can kill. They sent us to kill Japan and Africa. We policed Europe. Can you kill? Can you kill a white man? Can you kill the nigger in you? Can you make your nigger mind die? Can you kill your nigger mind and free your black hands to strangle? Can you kill? Can a nigger kill? Can you shoot straight and fire for good measure? Can you splatter their brains in the street? Can you kill them? Can you lure them to bed to kill them? We kill in Vietnam for them. We kill for UN and NATO and CETO and US and everywhere for all the alphabet but BLACK. Can we learn to kill white for black? Learn to kill niggers, learn to be black men." It's written by a white woman. A black woman, I mean. React to that one. How far down in the seat are you now? I'm on the floor. But what do you say? And what have we let go of? There are lots, I mean, in grad school in English, you're talking about, well, what's the definition of poetry? What makes a poem a poem? And you read Samuel Johnson and you read all kinds of people and Keats and Wordsworth. Yeah, this is what a poem is. And I think they'd probably say, that ain't a poem. But we got to let go of the most secure thing. This is my definition. Watch me pass my MA test, because this is what poetry is. For the last one, it's short. this is Don L. Lee. He's a teacher at Chicago now. And I think we're all old enough to get this. This is how he reads it. Dee 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 wee 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 nick 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 nick. Is that a poem?
I know that's not the first time you've read that.
why I work out, just so I can read poetry.
How do you spell that?
Spell what?
I mean, any
T-H-A-T?
Word.
No. D-E-E? 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 Nig? N-I-G? Yeah, I mean, it's phonetic, right? Yeah. But, okay, enough, but just, yeah.
It's interesting, whenever I sit around Lutheran tables and someone gets angry, or if it's me, that's the end of the conversation. You're automatically out in this culture. And we had this goal of 10%. Multicultural, back when the ELCA was formed, and when you listen to those poems, it's no wonder we're just at 2%.
Yeah, that's good. That's really, yeah. Other comments, and just to hear, and that's a great response to how that fits in our culture and our church culture too. But how about individually too, just in your guts?
Well, I mean. You talk about poetry, and I think of that as being vision or a different point of view that I wouldn't have thought of. And those are just points of view of the last three poems, especially. But yeah, I mean, I never would have occurred to me. I just can't. They're outside my experience.
Yeah, they're outside our experience. The most secure thing in our life is here, and we're going to let go of that. And we're trapped. Well, we'll see what Frost says about that. We got to get to him. Anything else? Let's look to Frost. Everybody got a copy? Except me? Thank you. Just to set you up with another poem, if you had a book of Frost's complete works, this would be the first poem you'd encounter there. I'm going out to clean the pasture spring. I'll only stop to rake the leaves away and wait to watch the water clear, I may. I shan't be gone long. You come too? I'm going out to fetch the little calf that's standing by the mother. It's so young it totters when she licks it with her tongue. I shan't be gone long. You come too. This gentle reminder that I'm going out and I'm going to have this experience that's totally impractical, right? Rake the leaves off the spring. They don't need to be raked off. The spring's been there for 10,000 years. To fetch the little calf that's standing by the mother, it's so young. I mean, before people started, you know, domesticating cows, they were fine, I guess. I've never studied that. But we're just welcome. We're going to go on this simple little journey. But I'm going to suggest that in this normal journey that most of us, white Americans, Lutherans, or we don't have to be, whatever we are, people that gather at Holden, this is as radical as dee 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 wee wee Paris Peace Talks. By the way, you get that, don't you? If you're not around Paris Peace Talks, you know what the Paris Peace Talks were for 6 months? You know what the big issue was?
The table.
The shape of the table. And in those 6 months, how many Vietnamese and Americans died? And that's why the poem dee 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 wee wee, you know. Waste of time. Okay. let's go through it just kind of line by line. And then at the end, I think this is important. I'll just read the whole thing straight through without any commentary or anything. But you will make the comments first. But I poetry is also, it's about beauty, it's about truth, it's about philosophical argument, but it's mostly about experience. And it is an experience in itself. So I want you to have that too. And we'll do that. I'll do that at the end, just read it through. But just... whenever you feel like, I'll stop, and whatever you feel like saying, say. Something there is that doesn't love a wall. By the way, you maybe do know that Robert Frost read this in Berlin, on the Great Wall between East and West Germany. Imagine the power of that. Here's the old Robert Frost coming up with a cane and his gray hair and his glasses. Something there is that doesn't love a wall. You gotta write the word goosebumps. Okay. That sends the frozen groundswell under it and spills the upper boulders in the sun. Stop.
I'm like now the wall in Israel.
Yeah.
That's coming out Palestinians and Palestinians, not the Israelis from Palestinians.
Not what?
It's blocking Palestinians from Palestinians, not Israelis from Palestinians.
So I'm going to draw this as we go. But what I draw so far, something that doesn't level wall, it sends the frozen groundswell under and spills the upper boulders in the sun. Apparently, this is New England, of course, and we've got these weird-shaped rocks and this stone wall. And some of these have, on the upper level, right, have fallen down. But he doesn't know what. But he conjectures that it's, and we all know this, if you live in the Midwest, you know it, every year the roads are what? Full of potholes. That sends the frozen groundswell under it and spills the upper boulders in the sun and makes gaps even two. So not just one rock falls, right? A lot of them. Makes gaps even two can pass abreast. That's one thing, maybe. The work of hunters is another thing. I've come after them and made repair where they have left not one stone on a stone, but they would have the rabbit out of hiding to please the yelping dogs. What's that about? Just literally, you don't find anything symbolic or hidden.
Well, the rabbit's hiding inside the wall, and so they dig out the rocks so they can get to it, so they die. The dog can get it.
So watch this, folks. We've got a rabbit. So far, it looks more like a cat. And we're going to get the big dog here, and they're barking at that rabbit, and so they got to get the rabbit out, right? So we're going to get rid of a couple of these stones, too. And he's come back after that, right? And what does he do? He puts it back together, because we've got to get those up there. But, there's no but here, but the gaps I mean, no one has seen them made or heard them made, but at spring mending time, we find them there. I let my neighbor know beyond the hill, and on a day we meet to walk the line and set the wall between us once again. We keep the wall between us as we go. Just literally, what's he doing?
Fixing
the wall.
Both on one side and the other side.
Yep, so we got a guy, we get this wall, they're paired up, we got a guy on this side. There he is, we got the guy over here. And they're walking the walls between them, and so that's our image. We're just watching these guys put that wall up. Anything else about any? Just literally again about that scene.
Well, it's springtime.
It's spring. Good.
Keeping separate.
They're separate. They're on opposite sides. Good.
And the cow are going to be out in the fields. So they need to be separated by the wall.
Yeah, that's what we would think, right? There's cattle out there. We got to separate them. I don't want your cows over or me. Okay. Some are so, and some are loaves, and some so nearly balls, we have to use a spell to make them balance. Stay where you are until our backs are turned. What are they doing? We've got this wall, but some of them are such round, right?
Yeah, like balls. Yeah.
Yeah. And what happens?
They roll off.
They roll off. And what do they say about that?
Don't roll off my leaf.
Yeah. So obviously, what?
They're going to roll off.
And are we going to go back and fix them again?
No.
Not till next year. Okay. But just get them up there. So we're going through. So keep talking about that. We're going through this motion. Get these walls up. There you are on our backs, your turn. I'm gone. Mm-hmm. I'm done. So what have they accomplished?
Their duty.
Ooh, their duty.
Yeah.
Expectation.
Yeah, what they've always done, yeah. They haven't accomplished fixing the wall at all. And they don't really seem to care. What? Yeah, nice phrase. Continue the tradition. We wear our fingers rough with handling them.
Why don't they have gloves on?
You know, I hadn't thought of that. Dear Robert.
Maybe he did.
What the heck are you guys doing? But it's they wear their fingers rough. Just the feeling you get from that. Mm-hmm. Is this easy?
No.
It's labor. But by golly, we're going to get this done.
Tradition? Tradition?
There we go. Oh, just another kind of outdoor game, one on a side. It comes to little more. There where it is, we do not need the wall. He is all pine, and I am apple orchard. My apple trees will never get across and eat the cones under his pines, I tell him. He only says, good fences make good neighbors. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, what's yours is yours, what's mine is mine, and you want to keep that tradition up.
Yeah. Ooh.
Feeling it.
Good. What I've been told about the reason why they have those fences is that they have so much rock and soil. rock in the soil, then that's how the fences were made.
Well, that makes sense, except coming from northern Minnesota, where the land is terrible, they had pick rock all the time too, but they didn't make walls out of it.
Yeah.
They just piled them in the middle of the field.
Yeah, there's an annoyance every spring.
Yeah, I mean, before you plow in northern Minnesota, you pick rock. And so you're right, I mean, that's, but this, they're not just piling them anywhere, they're deliberately making a wall. That make good, sure, in New England, right, throughout England and New England, that's, you've seen this. What's the Shawshank Redemption, that where they hide the thing, you know, that's a great image for me anyway, the wall, the rock.
It's a property line.
Okay, is this the property line? It probably is. But, go ahead.
It makes me think of how I mow my lawn and am careful not to mow my neighbor's grass.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, I guess Mom had a sprinkler system put in, and there's a rental house next door. She wanted them to make it so it goes all the way to their driveway. That part is their lawn, not Mom's. But Mom wanted it to go over there.
Sure. So I don't want my neighbor's lawn burned out and brown.
Yeah, I want it to all look nice.
It'd be nice.
Yeah.
I also had a cut.
Yeah, a way to go.
There's another thought, though, with this. If they're, yeah. What they're doing is somewhat futile because it's going to fall down anyway,
yeah.
Then maybe it's the relationship they have together with each other, that, and that maybe what they're talking about while they're mending the wall, that's what's important here.
Yeah. So there is a relationship here. I mean, the guy says, I tell my neighbor beyond the hill, it's, you know, it's time, let's go. Okay, but why do they do this? I guess that's the next stanza. It's not a stanza, it's all one. It looks like a stanza, but that's just because that's how I hear out to two different pages out of the book. Spring is the mischief in me, and I wonder if I could put a notion in his head. Why do they make good neighbors? Isn't that where there are cows? That was our first suspicion, right? Isn't it where there are cows? But here there are no cows. Before I built a wall, I'd ask to know what I was walling in or walling out and to whom I was like to give offense. Go ahead. I mean, all that. Spring is, well, why do they make good neighbors? And then he's got, what do you think of this speaker? I mean, his attitude is...
Be careful where you make your walls.
Sure.
But I mean, he knows he has to be careful, but it doesn't sound like he knows why. I mean, he's kind of feeling his way around, trying to...
No, I mean, maybe they should tear down the wall. Maybe they should talk about it, because pines don't do that with that.
Yeah, and his question, to whom am I giving offense by making this wall, whether it's in Israel, or it's in apartheid, or it's in GLBT and the Lutheran Church, and we've got all kinds of walls, and we know about them. And then, poetry does that, right? It takes us beyond its own literal sense, but we got to start with a literal, and then it creates vision for us, and we imagine more than a wall running through New Hampshire. We see a wall between the Palestinians and the Israelis.
Well,
and
I was going to say, as soon as you build a wall, then suddenly there is inside, outside, your side, my side.
Yep. This is very good. Well, what else do you say about the guy? And I'll just read the line again and just see how you jump on it. And I wonder if I could put a notion in his head. Does he know? Does he get it? Hey, you know, here's the notion. Here, my friend, you've just said to me, good fences make good neighbors, and why do they make good neighbors? Where there are cows, and I'm going to kind of argue with you now. Isn't it where there are cows? But here there are no cows. What do you think of him? This is not a trick question, just guts. You know, here's something for you. If you guys read, and I know you do, that Holden reads, all literary criticism starts in the guts. And as we talk, it gets to our head. But it should get there later. If you start in the head, then you're going to get all screwed up. So just in your guts, where do you...
Well, it sounds like one of those questions he'd like to ask, but he's afraid to ask. You know, I mean, we all have those questions.
Why would he be afraid to ask that?
Well, either because there's some reason he doesn't know about, or it's impropriety, or maybe the other guy really wants the wall and he doesn't want it. Or maybe the other guy doesn't want the wall.
Whatever it is, though, he's going to be careful, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's easier to just leave the wall up than to deal with it.
Oh, did you hear that? It's easier to leave the wall up than just to deal with it.
Yeah. Hey, I heard.
Yeah. It's easier to... Lars just got back from a trip, and he talked just in the short time I had with him this morning at breakfast, which ended up being kind of a long time. He went to lots of places where people say, you know, how's your bike ride? Let's talk about something else. It's easier to just leave it there. And, okay, well, we'll take the metaphors into our lives in a second. But just remember that this guy has this attitude. I'm going to put a notion in your head. So who's smarter, do you think, here? I mean, who gets it? That, you know, hey, this is kind of a waste of time.
That's the one who built that wall.
The narrator. Yeah, the narrator, sure. He's come on, what are we building this thing for? I'm going to put this notion. And then I've always thought it's almost, is this unfair, that he's a little bit self-righteous. That I'm going to put a notion here. Why do we do this? And there are no cows. And beside that, you've got to know who you're offending. And I think of that stuff. I, the narrator. Something there is that doesn't love a wall. And that's the same word he started out with before. We don't know what this is. But I'm going to list, out of the poem, what are some of the ideas so far that are answering this? Something there is that doesn't love a wall. What's the first one? I'll get you started. Right out of the poem, the frost. Something, what else?
The round boulders.
Okay, the round boulders. The
dogs.
You know, dogs.
Hunters.
Their fingers.
Yeah, this is a lot. I never thought of that. That's good. This is hard work. Why do this? Okay, so something, but those things aren't quite it, you know. So he's got another idea. Now he's getting a little crazy, I think. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that wants it down. I could say elves. And we say, oh, stop it. I could say elves to him, but it's not elves exactly. And I'd rather he said it for himself. What do you think of that?
Well, it seemed to bring it up.
Sure. You talk about this. You bring this up. But I want you to see it. I get it. But is that fair to say? Is that the right language? That this guy gets it? Can I write that on the board? Because once it's on the board, it's an absolute. Yeah, it goes on. It's on the quiz. That's right. The narrator gets it. I mean, he's saying, you know, be careful of who you offend. You know, it's stupid. We don't have cows. Your apples are, you know, we've heard it all. Okay. I'd rather he said it for himself. And now he really, I think. You tell me. Is this condescending? I see him there, bringing a stone grasped firmly by the top in each hand. He's got stones. Okay. Like an old stone savage armed. He moves in darkness, as it seems to me. Not of woods only and the shade of trees. I should read that this way. And not of woods only in the shade of trees. Darkness, savage, what do you think? What's he saying about his neighbor?
He's in the dark.
He's in the dark. And not, that's a metaphor, right? They don't do this at night, but you know, he can't see the light. This guy is living in the dark.
And the question is why they're building the wall.
Doesn't question it. This guy's, yep. He, the neighbor, doesn't get it. So is that fair enough?
Yeah.
Okay, so we got the narrator gets it, and the neighbor.
And this image isn't literal either. The stones he's talking about, you probably don't pick up from the top, I would guess. I'm thinking that maybe he's abstracting there a little bit.
I hadn't thought of that, but it makes sense. And there are some big rocks, and there are some little rocks. And I used to help my farmer friend pick rock in the spring. We did have some that we'd pick up like that, but a lot of them took two of us. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Anything else?
How do you get beyond the idea of ownership and responsibility as to why we have boundaries between our lawns? And
Ownership and responsibility?
Yeah, how do you get beyond that to tear down the wall?
Okay, well, okay, good. So on one side, the whole wall is, I'm going to make a different line of move. Ownership and responsibility. And what is beyond that? What would you, I mean, to get beyond that, what do you have to have?
A vision.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool because I said that. Okay. And the ownership, in that little joke is the security. I own this land. You know, and those of you know, we know about Native Americans. How can you own land? You can't put it on your back and haul it away. You can't own it. Now, you can't own air. You can't own, you know, and we shoot down planes and fly in our airspace and stuff like that, right? So that is right. That's good. You get beyond the ownership. This is my territory here, and we're going to, and that must be maybe what the neighbor thinks. Good fences make good neighbors. We've got, this is my land. I'm responsible for it, even though I do water the lawn a little bit further over.
If somebody has an accident on your property, you're responsible. If it's on his property, don't get sued.
Yep. Who's your lawyer?
Good fences make good neighbors always suggested to me a sense of community more than responsibility.
It's a completely different, and it's appropriate here, too. It's good.
It was, if good fences keep my cattle in, so that they don't trample on somebody else's stuff. You know, I've had sleepless nights when my animals got out, and I didn't know if they were ravaging the cornfield behind.
Yeah.
And good fences make good neighbors in that respect.
Yeah.
But if it is about community, then I would suggest neither of them get out, because his language suggests that he is no more interested in community with this fellow than the fellow behind the fence.
Yeah. And it, for sure, go ahead.
I just, I don't know if this is significant or not, but one thing that came to me is that walls and fences are used interchangeably in this poem, but they don't create the same images for us.
Yeah.
There's a kind of a permanence to a wall that is not created when we use the word fence.
It's got everything to do with it. You're right. Are you an English teacher?
No,
I know you're not. You're not. You're way ahead of English teachers. We don't get this at all. The Lutheran pastor from Minnesota, they get it. Yeah. So we do have that kind of ambiguous sense of this poem. Is it about community? Is it about traditions? Is it about, well, let's go all the way to the end, and then we'll see. He moves in darkness, and, he will not go behind his father's saying, and he likes having thought of it so well, he says again, good fences make good neighbors. Why does the neighbor build the fence?
Because his father did.
Dad. The neighbor we're saying doesn't get this. Dad. And it's the saying of Dad.
Tradition.
It's tradition.
And Grandpa and Great-Grandpa.
Yeah. And I don't really know, I mean, when the practical questions, hey, do my pine cones eat your apples? No, but that... He doesn't, why does he put that fence, the neighbor now, why does he build a fence?
For the same reason. It's always been done that way.
So we have we're done, right? Clear little sense of, yeah, this stupid neighbor doesn't get it. And, we know that traditions get in our way. I think there's more. Not hidden. But I'll start you out by asking this question. Who initiates the action?
The narrator,
yes.
And what do you make of that?
He could have not said anything.
Well, he was the one who told the neighbor to start building the wall again.
Right.
Well, he said it's spring. It's time.
Spring is many times. I tell my neighbor all off the hill, let's go repair this sucker. Even though.
I don't want to do it.
Use questions.
Yeah! I don't want to do it. It wears my fingers rough. They don't stay up anyways. There we are, our backs are turned. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, and I'm good enough. That's good enough for me. Something, leave it down.
Seems to me that he got that notion after I started to work and build that. So I don't darn work. Why the heck are we doing this?
Yeah, but that's good. And why are we doing it? And they've been doing it, apparently, every year. So he knows how much work it's going to be. We wear our fingers rough.
And each year it gets a little harder.
No, that's for other people.
the lack of any names leads me to wonder if the neighbor is not
names.
Yeah. Leads me to wonder if the neighbor is not having the same conversation. Reversed, that he's on the other side of the wall, going, well, you know, it's time to build the wall again. What a stupid thing this is, and yet both of them continue to do it.
Yeah, but the neighbor does say, I mean, he has a reason, doesn't he? Whether it's good or bad, he has a reason to do this. And the reason is,
Good fences make good neighbors.
And that's what his father's saying. He likes standing by it so much, he stands behind it. Keep going with the notion that the guy who initiates the action is the guy that we said gets it.
Well, he goes beyond, he questions. Just doesn't accept the status quo.
He questions it, but he doesn't do anything to prevent it. So you have, even though the neighbor is depicted in sort of all these rough ways and sticking with tradition, at least you understand why he would be continuing to build the wall, whereas with the narrator of the poem, it's totally unclear why he has all of these issues and all of these problems. He's still participating in the action, and in some ways, I mean, I always feel like the narrator is way more responsible for, has greater guilt.
Maybe he's thinking about all these things, but he's afraid to do anything about it. So he says, "Well, you know, let's build this wall before I think too hard."
So the word we had up here before, I've already erased it, was aware, and we said, "Sorry, this thing we're running on the juice. I don't need it." The narrator gets it. Their narrator is aware, but.
Yeah. I want to go there.
What feels different for me from the poems that you read is the line that says, "Spring is the mischief in me." You know, this is kind of for fun. I wonder if I can put a notion in his head. And the poets you read before weren't thinking of. This is just mischief.
Yeah, that's good.
So is there some power in this for
him? Power?
Power around controlling his neighbor.
I hadn't thought of that, but he goes and gets him and says, "Come on, let's do this."
I mean, he really, you know, is sort of puppeteering this.
Not a word appears in the poem, but the phrase, "something there is that doesn't love a wall," suggests to me issues in regard to freedom. And the fact that Robert Frost read that at the Berlin Wall must mean that the poet had something to say about freedom. That this poem related to the kind of walls we build between people.
Yeah. I'm going to write that down, and I think, good, it's coming back. A poem about freedom. That's pretty interesting and pretty accurate. We'll run with that for a little bit. What other theme words, and then we'll see if we can find that theme word, the words manifest in the images of the poem. What other theme word would you put in here? You already got one, responsibility.
Family duty would be sort of under that, I guess.
Okay, well, sure.
Tradition.
Okay. And
it's a ritual
we had this war up here. I'm going to change this a little bit. Aware to a higher level of consciousness. That is, the narrator has seems to have a higher level of consciousness than the neighbor does. Okay, now we know this guy with more consciousness does it anyway. I know we shouldn't do it, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to let my neighbor go because we're going to keep this going.
So he goes against his own values.
Huh?
He goes against his own values.
So we got a poem about values. All this coming, this is all good stuff, gang. This comes from these images of a guy picking up rocks and putting them in there, and dogs and rabbits, and say anything you want to, but and if there's more words, these abstractions.
I still see fear. He recognizes all this stuff, but he doesn't want to be the one that brings it up. But let's get the stupid wall this year.
But he's afraid to not do it, isn't he?
Well, I mean, he's so afraid that he initiates it.
In 5 minutes, run with anything outside of it, then I'll go back to the poem. We'll let the poem be the experience that conveys sense of values, freedom, responsibility, duty, traditions, consciousness, and fear. But take it away from the poem now for a second and talk about any wall you want to and see where these notions that you found in this poem come up. And even, for example, you've already mentioned the wall between Israel and on the West Bank.
Also the wall between some families. I'm hearing stories here in the village. You
talk to people and say, oh, I would like them as nice, you know, as yours. And they talk about these walls in their families.
That's a great example. And just without having to be personal or anything, think about the walls that families draw between husband and wife, parents and kids, brothers and sisters, you know about them. Is this part of it?
Yes.
Is this part of it?
Yes.
Is this part of it? And yeah, you got the poem. Okay, find another wall. This is fun stuff.
The sexuality study of the last 5 years.
Yeah.
what strikes me about this poem is that they were very careful to try to put 50% of the time on the anti side and 50% of the time on the positive side. You know, this kind of this last sentence, I just would rather they say it themselves. And in the end, you end up with something that says, unity is our major goal, which is...
Boy, is that a good... Yeah, and you can put that in the poem. The narrator wants unity. I'd rather he said it for himself. And if he ain't going to say it, we're going to put the wall up. We're not... That's good. More walls.
How about between our gay and lesbian pastors and churches? And a lot of that is fear.
Economic.
Fear. Consciousness. Mm-hmm. There's a wonderful line in a Wendell Berry poem. He's talking about a Russian peasant, but it applies to all kinds of people, where he says, how can they consider your death negligent now that they've seen pictures of your face? And in other words, one-on-one, it's a whole different ballgame. Your death, or whether it's a spiritual death or physical death, how can they consider it negligible now that I've seen you are... Yeah, okay, that's consciousness, good. Keep going, walls, they're all over.
Social walls, economic walls, clubs.
U.S. and Mexico.
U.S. and Moscow.
Mexico.
Mexico and Moscow, too. But yeah, U.S. and Mexico. But keep them out, for crying out loud. And I think another thing, and we'll read the whole one and be done. I think this is a personal thing that I see in all literature. We make certain assumptions, and they're based upon our own notion of, I mean, all these words fit with that too. And the assumption is, the neighbor has it, right? Good fences make good neighbors. And I've asked this question in some other sessions. What assumptions do we make when we say, I mean, throw out a truth. We, you know, what, 30 years ago, the Lutheran Church made assumptions about women being ordained. Mm-hmm. What assumptions were those that said we can't ordain women? What assumptions were those that said we can't let blacks and whites sit in the same schoolroom together or sit on the bus together? Renita's going to have a great film on tomorrow night, right? What time? I'm going to put a plug right now.
3:45.
3:45 the Force More?
A Force More Powerful.
A Force More Powerful, yeah. And it's about that. What assumptions, and this one is about the civil rights movement and one particular part of in Nashville. What assumptions do we make when we say that blacks and whites can't sit at the lunch counter together? Look, keep going. And so the poem is about that, too. Anything else? Any other theme words? Then we'll go back and look at the whole poem, and all these things will be rattling around in your head, and that's really cool. Yeah. I don't know how to spell that. Any other words you want to put in there? Okay, we'll just go to the poem. Quite a bit different from dee-dee-dee-dee-wee. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that sends the frozen groundswell under it and spills the upper boulders in the sun and makes gaps even two can pass abreast. The work of hunters is another thing. I've come after them and made repair where they have left not one stone on a stone, but they would have the rabbit out of hiding to please the yelping dogs. The gaps I mean, no one has seen them made or heard them made, but at spring mending time we find them there. I let my neighbor know beyond the hill, and on a day we meet to walk the line and set the wall between us once again. We keep the wall between us as we go. To each the boulders that have fallen to each, and some are loaves and some so nearly balls we have to use a spell to make them balance. Stay where you are until our backs are turned. We wear our fingers rough with handling them. Oh, just another kind of outdoor game, one on a side. It comes to little more. There, where it is, we do not need the wall. He's all pine, and I am apple orchard. My apple trees will never get across and eat the cones under his pines, I tell him. He only says, good fences make good neighbors. Spring is the mischief in me, and I wonder if I could put a notion in his head. Why do they make good neighbors? Isn't it where there are cows? But here there are no cows. Before I built a wall, I'd ask to know what I was walling in or walling out and to whom I was like to give offense. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that wants it down. I could say elves to him, but it's not elves exactly, and I'd rather he said it for himself. I see him there, bringing a stone grasped firmly by the top in each hand, like an old stone savage armed. He moves in darkness, as it seems to me, not of woods only in the shade of trees. He will not go behind his father's saying, and he likes having thought of it so well, he says again, good fences make good neighbors. Anybody?
I just noticed this time through that, you know, even though they each keep to their own side, since it makes gaps and even two can pass abreast, I mean, they could walk through if they wanted to, right?
Yeah, right. It's good. In 1 minute, just how is a poem, once you've been through it like you have, and then just hear the whole thing put together as a unit, my argument would be, as a teacher, that this is an experience. I mean, is that true? I don't know. And if so, or if not. In other words, the intellectual analysis is over. And now we're just...
Yes,
something there isn't doesn't love a wall. Yeah. Okay, you passed. And what's that experience like?
Enlightening, opening. I mean, the poem is a different way of looking at things, and the experience is a different way of looking at the
And
poem.
Do you then look at? Do readers have a different? Oh, I never. Have we let go of anything that branch or? I never.
No. I mean, has it really moved me that way yet?
Okay, that's fair.
I get a visual picture.
Anything happened to you on this journey when you've seen this picture and you walked through the sky?
Well, I see almost a quietude in this man wondering, why
do we do these things? Yeah. How about you? Now, you don't even have to answer that, maybe. Maybe that's the question, just leave you with that. How about you? How about the reader when we go down this road, or along this wall, we're doing it too. Mm-hmm. And I think good literature should do to the reader what it does in the literature. If a character is confused, we should somehow be confused too. And then that experience, then it's clarified somewhat.
This is like a resignation. Because I don't think, I think it's going to make you go to action. I want to break down some walls now.
That's cool. I think Robert Frost would probably be ready to go. Well, you've been awesome. I wish you all want to come back. Augustana starts on September 3rd. You can enroll there. Okay, see you later.
You say you teach an understanding?
Yeah. Sioux Falls is the Norwegians. It's my understanding of Scandinavian apartheid. Augustana, Sioux Falls is Norwegian origins, and Augustana Rock Island is Swedish origins. You sure couldn't found a college together, could you? I mean, that's like putting blacks and whites on the same lunch counter. Wow.
At one time.
Oh, yeah, come here.
Should an American literature course be Twain, Melville, Hurston, and Wright?
Then they call it work.
It makes them all up. And the answer is, that's cool, but we're still a great need for a separate black literature program because we're so far behind. Yeah. But know what's happening, because our kids come to Augustana, and they've heard of Richard Wright, and they've heard of James Baldwin. And, although, yeah, they have. That's good. It's a lot better. You couldn't, I don't think, I know, you couldn't buy a major American poet's book today that would leave Gwendolyn Brooks out, or, I mean, you just couldn't. This, I think this was 1961.
The contrast between the black portrait and Frost is so diverse that I was reverberating from all the black poetry that you started this hour with, that I couldn't even focus on this.
Mm.
I mean,
well, that's cool.
I could intellectually. I mean, I could go through the exercise, but I was so shaken emotionally, internally. I thought, well, I could make myself think about this as a distraction, but it was very distracting.
Yeah, well, I know the feeling. It changed my life. I went back to Augustana and said, we got to have black lit. And it was those poems. But here's another one. I can do part of it for you. Abortions will not let you forget. You remember the children you got that you did not get. The damp, small pulps with a little or no hair. The singers and workers who never handled the air. You'll never neglect them or beat them or silence or buy with a sweet. You'll never wind up the sucking thumb or scuttle off ghosts that come. And you'll never leave them controlling your luscious sigh in return for a snack of them with a gobbling mother eye. I have heard in the voices of the wind, the voices of my dim, killed children. I have contracted. I have eased my dim dears at the breasts they could never suck. I have said, sweets, if I sinned, if I stole your luck and your lives from your unfinished reach, it's enough. I've lost the lines now anyway. But it ends this way. Believe me, I knew you. Though faintly, and I loved you all. That's how the poem ends. That's like a Robert Frost. That isn't wild and crazy, is it? So Black Lit isn't just what I've read. That's only the group of poems there. So that's Gwendolyn Brooks, and the poem's called The Mother. And it's a mother's view of a woman who obviously didn't want to abort it. And one of the lines in there is, believe me that in, believe that even in my deliberateness, I was not deliberate. Now, you can't half abort a kid, but she had all these questions that she knew this fetus and she loved it. I just thought of that those poems were clearly black revolutionary stuff. Unless I told you that this was written by a black poet, you would never know, would you? The abortion, you wouldn't know that.
No, you wouldn't know that, but I'm beginning to get there's a style in which the black poets are writing, which is profoundly, it doesn't sugarcoat it. It's very clearly directed towards the focus material that they want to get you to think about.
Yeah. I think that's true. I mean, they can't sugarcoat, I mean, look at the American history.
There's
they can't sugarcoat slavery.
No,
yeah.
There's nothing to sugarcoat in abortion or slavery.
Okay, thank you. We're out of here.